Good morning. Sounds like this side needs to work on making sure your people come each week. I told Bernard, I said, we had 96 or 97 people here last Sunday, which was probably our highest this year. And then today, there was a lot of empty seats on this side. And I said, we're going to have to work on this side over here, get them to work on bringing their people. I hope you enjoyed Pastor Tim's sermon last week, our district superintendent. I thought he did an excellent, excellent job. I never heard him preach before, but that was my first time, and I thought it was very applicable and very good for our church. He wrote a very nice letter to our church, to our leadership, and was really impressed with what he saw here, and so thank you for that. Thank you for behaving for the most part, Randy. We'll get you this week, though, Randy. I got a few jokes in here directed at you. We are going to finish our series, The Lord of Creation. We've got about three more weeks left, and today I'm kind of breaking my rule where I was covering one day at a time. We're going to cover a day and a half, even though it's probably not a half a day, but we're going to cover the creation of animals, and that happens on both day five and the beginning part of day six. Day six is when human beings are created, but before that, he creates the land animals. On day five, he creates flying and swimming animals. On day six, and this is a little tease for you, he did create dinosaurs. So we're going to talk about dinosaurs a little bit today. I am an animal lover. I am one of those, and Sarah hates them, but I'm one of those that will watch a nature documentary on Netflix or whatever it may be, just to see the animals in their original habitat. I've had a variety of pets throughout the years. As a child, I had dogs, cats, birds. I think I had an ant farm at one time, fish. Me and my cousin would catch turtles and keep turtles for a little bit. One of them had a tumor on the side of his head. And then we would keep the chickens that got left over from my dad's farm. When they'd come pick them up, some of them would get left, and we would kind of take care of them. Today, I have one betta fish, three snails in that betta fish tank because I'm getting tired of cleaning the algae out, so they'll eat the algae for me, two small goldfish ponds, two dogs, a crazy cat, and then my wife's personal favorite, two tree frogs. If you know Sarah, she hates frogs, and I'll tell you what happened there. I have what's called a vivarium, and it's like a terrarium. I have live plants in there, and then I actually put it's an aquarium in itself, and then I put an aquarium within the aquarium. I should have took a picture to show you, but what I did there was I was at my mother-in-law's house doing some work, and there was a couple tree frogs there. Sarah went with me, so I was like, hey, I'm going to catch these tree frogs. I'm going to see if I can keep them alive. And so I put them in a water bottle, took them home, dump them into the thing, and I told Elijah, but I said, don't tell Mama that we have tree frogs in the house, because she will freak out. I think it only lasted a day before I told her that there was tree frogs in the house. But now, because we have tree frogs in the house, we have crickets in the house and little roly-polies in the house for me to feed them. We have a whole ecosystem there in our house, essentially. But you know, the weirdest pet that I've ever taken care of was a four-legged chicken. It looked similar to this. The legs were coming out the backside. We kept it, me and Alex and my other cousins, we kept it for I don't know how long. It stayed alive for a little while, but it was obviously deformed. Something happened to it. And because it was four-legged, the chicken company would not take it because I don't think anybody wants four chicken legs. That's the best part of chicken. Not these chicken legs that are coming out the rear end. I got other jokes. I'll just save them for right now. But yeah, we had a four-legged chicken, and so we went to Ripley's, believe it or not, at Myrtle Beach, and they had a four-legged chicken there, and I was like, well, I can believe this because we had it in little old Erech, North Carolina, so not that strange to me. I do know we have some animal lovers here today. Some of you have some more complex pets than I do. I know Lucas and Noah have a couple of chinchillas. David has had a monkey. Right, David? And then Angela has David. You talk about complex pets. That's a complex pet right there. If you are an animal lover, we are blessed here in this area because we can go right up to the North Carolina Zoo and see animals from all over the world. But here's the thing. Our zoo only barely scratches the surface of all the different types of animals in the world. On days 5 and 6, God creates a wide variety of animals, many that are not even around today. So let's talk about that a little bit as we work through days 5 and 6. So here we go. Genesis 1:20 through 23 is day 5. So let's read that. Then God said, "Let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth in the open expanse of the heavens." And God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarmed according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth." And there was evening, and there was morning, a fifth day. So on day 5, God gives life to many types of sea creatures and birds. And I specifically use the language here that he gives life because this is the first time in creation that God has created something that has life, at least from the biblical perspective, that has life in them. And the reason why I say from a big biblical perspective, the Bible doesn't consider anything alive unless it has breath. The plants do not have breath per se. And so he did not give them life. He created the plants. But this is the first thing. These animals are the first things that God has created that has life in them. So what it says in Genesis 1:20, let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures. The word for living creatures right there literally means breathing creatures that are alive. So these are sea creatures. These are birds that are living, moving, breathing, and feeling. I thought about today how animals have emotions. Animals, my dog, when I get onto them, their little ears go back because they know that they are in trouble. He created many types of sea creatures that day. It says that he created swarms of living creatures. Swarms, obviously, I think about bees swarming around my head or around my body, or just a swarm of bees, a ton of them. That's the picture that we want to have for what the seas looks like. He's filled the seas with all types of sea creatures. Did you know that an estimated 50 to 80% of all life on Earth is found under the ocean? 50 to 80%. Means the majority of life is not found where we can see it. It's found under the ocean. Any guesses on how many types of marine species there are? Throw a number out, Randy. 30 million, no? Billion, no. Less than that, a lot less than that. There's at least 243,000 marine species, but there are most likely at least 750,000. And there's possibly as many as 25 million different marine species. Not necessarily different animals. There's probably 30 billion animals. But talking about species there. That sounded like a very educated guess to me. Maybe not even educated guess. It's like, hell, somewhere around 243 to 25 million. I think anybody could have said that because that's a wide range. 95% of the oceans have not been explored yet. 95%. These sea creatures all look different, act differently, they live in different spots, they eat different things. I decided to get some pretty ones up here, and then this is Randy's cousin, actually. That's a descendant. That looks like a dog that drowned or something. You gonna dress up as Halloween as that? God created some beautiful creatures. Like, these are almost see-through. That is, like, spiraling. My mom and myself, I love seahorses. It's amazing that he created seahorses, especially male seahorses, with a pouch to carry the babies. The different colors that we see, the different shapes that we see. He created many, many, many different types of sea creatures that day. The Bible says that he created great sea creatures. Genesis 1:21 tells us that. God created the great sea creatures. The word for great there, and I might not be pronouncing it right, but it's teninum. And that word literally means to stretch. So God created stretched sea creatures. Sea creatures that are stretched out. Sea creatures that are big. Others translators translate this verse as sea monsters. Teninum would be the plural word. If we look at the singular form of that word, it is translated as serpent, dragon, or sea monster. It seems like here that we have an indication that God created some massive sea creatures, and that he did. The largest sea creature that we know of is a blue whale. A blue whale, the largest one that there ever was 110 feet long, or the length of 3 school buses. It can weigh 400,000 pounds, which is equivalent to the weight of 33 elephants. The tongue of a whale weighs as much as one elephant. Just the tongue weighs as much as one elephant. The heart is about the size of a small car. And on my notes, I says about the size of Randy's car. His Civic, yeah. That's how big the heart is. The blue whale's main blood vessel is wide enough for a person to crawl through. So we're talking about a creature that would fill this room. Huge. My mind can hardly comprehend it. The longest one was roughly 3 school buses long, 110 feet. Average is about 70 to 90. You can see that an average one is about 6 mid-sized cars lined up together. That is a big, big, big sea creature. And yet it might not be the biggest one that God created. There's a sea creature that is mentioned called Leviathan. And Isaiah 27:1 says this, "On that day the Lord will punish Leviathan, the fleeing serpent, with his fierce and great and mighty sword. Even Leviathan, the twisted serpent, and he will kill the dragon who lives in the sea." The word for dragon there is the same word that was used talking about the great sea creatures from Genesis chapter 1. Some people say that this animal really did not exist. Some will say that it's metaphoric. But yet we have a very clear description of this dragon or of this sea creature in Job 41. Let me read you a few of those verses. This is verses 13 through 15. "Who can strip off his outer covering? Who can pierce his double armor? Who can open the doors of his face? Around his teeth there is terror. His strong scales are his pride, locked as with a tight seal." Verses 18 through 21. "His sneezes flash forth light, and his eyes are like the eye of dawn. From his mouth go burning torches. Sparks of fire leap forth. From his nostrils smoke goes out as from a boiling pot and burning reeds. His breath sets coals aglow, and a flame goes forth from his mouth." Verses 22 through 24. "In his neck dwells strength, and dismay leaps before him. The folds of his flesh are joined together, firm and immovable on him. His heart is as firm as stone, and as firm as a lower millstone." So we're talking about an animal, and there's a really good YouTube video. I actually screenshotted this this picture from the YouTube video. It's a really good YouTube video that just kind of takes you through the different parts. So his scales, both in front and back, are pretty much impenetrable. You can't take them out. His mouth, he breathes fire out of his mouth. He has many teeth. His mouth is, I forgot how it described it there at first. Who can open the doors of his face? Talking about his mouth. So this was an armor skin creature, flamethrower, dragon of the sea that seems unbeatable. Because here's what Job 41:26 says. "The sword that reaches him cannot prevail, nor the spear, the dart, or the javelin. Yet, in Psalm 74:13, we're told this. This is about God splitting the Red Sea so that Israel could cross through to escape him from Egypt. You divided the sea by your strength. You broke the heads of the sea monsters in the waters. You crushed the heads of Leviathan, and you gave him as food for the creatures of the wilderness. This great creature that God made, this basically a dragon, what we would see displayed in kids' videos or whatever it may be, this thing was real. We're talking a big sea creature that looks maybe something like that. There's other pictures of possibly what it looked like that seems unbeatable, that man could not beat, God beat with ease and provides Leviathan as food for creatures in the wilderness. I think all of this points to the power of our God. Creation reminds us of God's power. You look at creation and you can see just how big and powerful God is if he could create animals that would fill this room. If he could create animals that we're going to crawl through their main blood vessel, that shows you how big and powerful is our God. I love Isaiah 40:26. It says, "Raise your eyes on high and see who has created these stars, the one who brings out their multitude by number. He calls them all by name. Because of the greatness of his might and the strength of his power, not one of them is missing." So we're talking about the sea creatures right now, but you look at all of creation, the stars that are millions and millions and millions of miles away. They're bigger than the whale that could fill this room. They're bigger than that. We should be amazed at the strength and the power of our God. And what creation reminds me of in particular is that with God's power, with the power that he possesses, if he wants to do something, it's going to be done. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. It is going to be done. God's will be accomplished. It reminds me, the Panthers are playing right now. I was watching a little bit of the game before service. And a few years ago, 2015 season in particular, a lot of times when a football team gets to the one-yard line, you know what's coming. They're just going to do a quarterback sneak to get them in the end zone, or they're going to do the Philadelphia Eagles now have a tush push where they push their tushes and get over the line. They're going to figure out a way to score. But in 2015, back in the Panther glory days, we don't have glory days anymore. In the Panther glory days, we had a 6'5 quarterback that was built like a linebacker. Cam Newton was a big fella. And he ended up getting hurt, you know, over the years, took a beating in many ways. And yet, when he would get down to the one-yard line, when the Panthers would get down the one-yard line, you knew the Panthers were going to score. Because one way or another, Cam Newton was going to get over that line, or he was going to throw a pass. A lot of times what Cam Newton would do is he would jump over the line, and you're talking about a 6'5 guy, 200-something pounds, and he stretched that ball just over the line, just barely, because in football, it just has to cross. The tip of the ball just has to cross the line. As long as it crosses the line, it's a touchdown. You knew he was going to score one way or another. But even then, that power doesn't even compare. The power of the president, political power of the president, doesn't compare to the power that God has. And here's the great thing about God. God uses his power for our good. He doesn't use it to strike us down. He doesn't use it to hurt us. He uses his power for our good. That's the promise in Scripture, that if we love him and if we are called according to his purpose, he will work all things around for the good of those who love him. If he wants something to happen, it is going to happen. So let me ask you something today, church, and I'm preaching to myself. Why do we worry so much? if God, this God of all power, if this God who can create animals bigger than this room, if God who can create animals that look like this that don't exist today, if God who has all this power that can create the moon, the stars, the earth, everything that we can see, if he's going to use that power for our good, why do we worry about all the stuff we worry about? We need to focus instead on staying in God's will. Because we know what he wills is going to happen. Stay in God's will then, by doing what God tells us to do. Because at least in my life, what causes me to worry is when I get outside of God's will. And I know I'm outside of God's will, because I know maybe I'm thinking something I shouldn't be thinking, or I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing. When you get outside of God's will, that's when you have to understand he can make something happen that maybe not for your good, because you're not doing good. Instead, if you stay in God's will, you will experience his power in your life in ways that you've never experienced before. His power that will work for your good. The second part of that day is that God creates the birds. He creates all types of birds, and when I say birds, we need to include all flying animals. So we're talking bats, pterodactyls, ostriches, all types of flying animals. There are somewhere around 20,000 different species of birds, and when I think about birds, I think a bit about how pretty they are. I loved going to the aviary at the zoo and being able to see the birds. I really hope they will rebuild the aviary so that we can walk in there, so that we can see the birds, so that we can... I love just being in there and knowing that all around you is life. You see the different colors of birds. I don't see any of Randy's cousins in here. They're too pretty. But the color combinations there amaze me. Peacocks. I love peacocks. Growing up at my... I would stay at my grandma's very often. And grandma actually had a peacock. They had a peacock that would stay around their house. They would feed it. I think it just kind of came up. And she has many, many of those feathers just in pots and vases and different things. When I think about the birds, it reminds me of the creativity of our God. And this really made me think about, we talk about people who are creative. People like artists, musicians, movie producers, etc. But all of them get their creative minds from the one who created. And that's God. Creativity originates with God because he is the one that created. In fact, I think I said this in the first sermon of the series. When we create something, we always take something that already exists and we morph it in some way. But God created everything out of nothing. Therefore, all of our creativity comes from what we already know, which God already created. But instead, with God, he created out of nothing. You realize there was no law, no decree that said that God had to create birds and the world that is as beautiful as it is. You know, God could have, because he is God, he could have created a boring world that's all in black and white, that is plain, that, I mean, he didn't have to do what he did, yet he created a very, very beautiful and complex world, a world full of color. In the Heaven series we did a while back, when we talked about some people who have died and went to heaven, and came back, or they had visions of heaven, one of the things that about all of them mentioned was that they could see more colors in heaven. So we, with all of these different beautiful colors, we only get a taste of what our God has created both in heaven and on earth. One of the things that I try to do, and I especially have been aware of it this week with doing this series, but we need to enjoy God's creativity. When we go to the beach with Sarah's family, we stay at a house that has the prettiest sunsets. We look out over, this is technically considered a creek, but it's part of the waterway. And so if high tide comes in at just the right time, it is the sunsets there are beautiful, beautiful. Sets just right over that water, and it just creates a beautiful scene. And a few years ago, I remember we were having some of the sand from the desert over in Africa. It was coming over, and so it created even prettier sunsets. But look at all the different colors that are even just present in this picture. And of course, this picture doesn't do it justice on how pretty it is. But every night, there's a different painting in the sky. I love Tanya taking the pictures that she posts on Facebook of what the sunset looks like at night. It's a different painting each and every night when we can see the sunset. And there's times we're at the beach where I just sit there and I marvel at the creativity of our God. And we're going to talk about next week how that creativity was done in making us too, was showed in making us too. How he made us so complex in ways that glorifies him. So God creates both the birds and the sea creatures according to their kind, which means he created certain species. We've already covered that during the series as well. When it says kind, it's talking about species. God then blessed them. This is another first thing that has happened. God blessed them and told them to be fruitful and multiply. To bless means to wish well. And what he does is he's literally communicating his desire that they multiply and they increase in numbers. And if you need to know how that happens, you can ask David as you leave today. But the fact he tells them to do that shows that they are mature. And we're going to get that in a second as well. In Genesis 1, 24 through 25, we see the creation of land animals. So this is moving to day 6, the beginning part of day 6. It says, then God said, let the earth produce living creatures according to their kind, livestock and crawling things and animals of the earth according to their kind, and it was so. God made the animals of the earth according to their kind, the livestock according to their kind, and everything that crawls on the ground according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. So in day 6, God created animals for agricultural use, animals that are close to the ground, and wild animals. Stood out to me this time that it says, let the ground produce, or let the earth produce. These animals, just like human beings, were created from the earth. There are some scholars that when, say, in day 5, when God says, let the sea teem with sea creatures, that God created the sea creatures out of water. It doesn't exactly say that, but it's just interesting to think about. But the animals are created from the ground, just as human beings are created from ground. The fossil records that we have show some interesting things that proves what the Bible already says. So we've stated multiple times that God has created the plants already mature because they're able to produce fruit. God creates the animals already mature because they need to reproduce. And God creates human beings already mature. Therefore, it is plausible that God could have created a mature earth, which throws off the scientists in determining the years, how old the earth is. The fossil records show that a species does not arise gradually in one area. Instead, when they see the fossils of these animals, they see that these animals appeared all at once, and they were, quote, fully formed at that time. So in other words, when animals appear, they don't see some babies, they see adults all at one time. It aligns with what Scripture tells us about them being mature. On that day, God creates 3 different types of animals. The word for livestock would be animals that are used for agricultural use. So think of cattle, think of cows, oxen, sheep, pigs, donkeys, camels, horses, etc. Anything that could be used for agricultural type purposes. The second type of animal that he created that day were animals that were close to the ground. These are the creepy crawling things that Sarah loves. They are the insects, the mice, the lizards, the beetles. Which, by the way, in my study, I didn't include it in the sermon, but I'll mention it. Did you know that there is a fire-breathing beetle we have today? Some type of chemical reaction that happens causes it to breathe like fire out of its mouth. Interesting, you can look it up. These would be turtles, snakes, alligators. And, you know, I was debating this. I don't know if this would include some other four-legged animals that are close to the ground, like dogs and cats. Because when you think about a dog and a cat compared to a giraffe or an elephant, a dog and a cat's a lot closer to the ground. So could be them, or they could be included in the wild animals at this point. But that's the third type of animal, is wild animals. The animals of the earth can be translated as beast of the earth. So this would be the untamed wild animals that were not of use for farming. These are animals like bears, tigers, monkeys, elephants, and probably David. And on my notes, it says mad at David. Maybe because I think you're going to be mad after I say that. It's supposed to say am, though. I think it's in this third category, the wild animals, that we see dinosaurs were created. And so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but I watched a very interesting video about the dinosaurs. And it was created, the video was made by a group called, I think, Creation and Genesis, I think is what they're called. But they said there is evidence that animals, dinosaurs existed while humans were on the earth. And we can see that in some of these cave paintings. That looks a lot like a dinosaur to me. That looks like a dinosaur to me. That looks like Randy to me. That looks like a dinosaur to me, and I don't know what that looks like to me. That almost looks demonic, but it could be some type of dinosaur. I don't know. But these people don't have textbooks and things that we can see, like we can see today. So why would they be drawing dinosaurs and stuff on the walls? I think because they existed at the time. They existed while humans were on Earth. And so according to that video I watched, and I agree with it, these dinosaurs, they were on the ark, or they wouldn't be here. Their theory with the dinosaurs is that the size that we see them later was not the size they always were. That at one point they were smaller than what we see now. And their theory is that the dinosaurs either died out by hunting, by just going extinct, by natural causes. One of the other things they pointed out was human beings used to live a long time, 900-something years. Now we're lucky to get to, what, 80 years? Things have changed. I know there's, you know, big debate about global warming and stuff, but I've got to think that the earth earlier on was a lot healthier earth to live in than it is today. And so if you're talking about a dinosaur that might need a little extra oxygen, a little bit extra of all this stuff, and the world continues to disintegrate, eventually they might not have what they need in the atmosphere in order to be able to live. Just something to think about. So they died out either by hunting or natural causes. Going along with the dinosaurs, but all the animals. At this point in creation, all animals are plant eaters, including human beings when we are created. In Genesis 1:30, it says this: "To every animal of the earth and to every bird of the sky and to everything that moves on the earth which has life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. So that right there tells us that the plants are the food, not other meat. It's the plants that are the food. And why do we know that it's just the plants for the food and not others? Because at this point, sin had entered the world, which means there is no death. So anything that had life, that had breath, couldn't die. The plants, they don't have breath. They're not alive. Therefore, they were the food. So we're all supposed to be vegetarians, Randy. I'm sorry. But yet, and this shows, I think, the wisdom of our God, and I'm getting to that in a second. Yet, God had built into the DNA of every animal, every living thing, the ability to eat meat, because he foresaw that the fall would happen and many animals would need to eat meat. Not only that, but it is clear that animals were built with the ability to evolve to their surroundings. We don't believe in evolution in terms of cell to an animal, but we do believe in evolution in that animals can change over time to go along with what their surroundings are. But yet, A dog's not going to become a cat, no matter how much they try. A cat's not going to become a dog. They're going to stay within their kind. So a dog's going to be a dog. A cat's going to be a cat. A bear is going to be a bear. I got them confused for a second. I said bat. But they think polar bears came from brown bears. And what happened is the polar bears, where they were at, over time, they began to turn white in order to camouflage into their surroundings. That was part of that evolutionary process that God had built into their DNA. Also made me think about, you know, the sun is shining more there. So the sun may have kind of bleached out their coat sort of thing. But yet, a polar bear didn't evolve from a monkey. We didn't evolve from monkeys. We evolved from human beings. But all of this points to the wisdom of our God. That he can create animals that he knows are going to need to eat meat later. He can create animals that are going to change depending on their surroundings. All of that points to just how wise our God is. When I talk about wisdom, it's more than just knowledge. It's about figuring out how to apply that knowledge to real life. And God is wise. In fact, he is the source of all wisdom. His wisdom is seen in creation, according to Psalm 104, 24 through 25. It says, Lord, how many are your works? In wisdom, you have made them all. The earth is full of your possessions. There's the sea, great and broad, in which are swarms without numbers. Animals, both small and great. He makes animals, he makes all of creation with wisdom. Everything from the color of their coats to feet that are fit for where they live. Like ducks, they have webbed feet that can both swim in the water and walk on land. Frogs and amphibians amaze me. Being able to live in water and live outside of the water, depending on what their surroundings need, that's pretty amazing to me. Even the circle of life, talking about animals that live, they eat other animals or plants, they reproduce, and then die. That is wisdom. God could have done this however he wanted to do it, but he did it this way, and it points to a wise creator. God is wise. And James tells us in James 1:5 that if you want wisdom, you probably should talk to the one that is wise. It says that if you lack wisdom, let him ask of God who gives to all generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. Also, part of that wisdom factor, when I think about how we should respond to God, is that we should trust him. If he can create all the laws of this universe and make this universe and this earth operate just as he intended it to, you better believe he can help you live your life on this earth for his glory. Because not only does he have the knowledge, he knows what's going to happen. He knows what we need now in order to set us up for what's to come. I talked about the Chronicles of Narnia a few weeks ago. Another series that's, you know, very popular today, and some people probably think it shouldn't be mentioned in church or sort of thing, but there's actually scriptural principles and Christian principles all throughout the Harry Potter series. And there's a man in Harry Potter named Dumbledore, and he's the head professor of Hogwarts, and he is working behind the scenes to set Harry Potter up through the whole series. I didn't read the books. I watched the movies because it's easier. But he is set, by the end of the series, you see how Dumbledore has set Harry Potter up. He was wise in how he did it. He was wise in the way he acted. But he set Harry Potter up so that he would get everything he needed in order to be the bad guy, he who shall not be named. He made sure that Harry Potter got the Cloak of Invisibility, that he got the Resurrection Stone, that he got the things he needed in order to win in the end. And has that same thing not happened in our life with God? Has God ever set you up for something that you had no clue was coming, but eventually it came and you look back 3 months before and he set you up for what was coming? He's done that in my life time and time again. That all points to the wisdom of our God, therefore we should trust him. And ultimately, to end today, all of creation points to the existence of God. He is real. He is alive. He created all that we see. Romans 1:20 says, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, that is, his eternal power and divine nature." So we talk about his power. We've already talked about the power that he possesses. His divine nature. He's creative. He's wise. All of that has been clearly perceived, being understood by what has been made, so that they, us, are without excuse. And so, you look at creation, it all points to the existence of God. And if God exists, then that changes everything for us. That should change how we live. That should change how we act. That should change what we believe. That should change us at our core. And so, the next part of that is, if God does exist, then we must. There's no maybes. There's no, hey, if you want to. If God really does exist, and creation says that God does exist, our only response, the only appropriate response, is to give him glory. To live a life of worship and devotion to him. Because here's the next part of that verse in Romans 1. Paul says, even though they knew God, they could look at creation, they see that God is around, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they become futile in their reasoning and their senseless hearts were darkened. If God exists, our only response is to give him glory, to change how we live, to change our devotion, to change who we're focusing on, to change our lives, and to come in faith in him and to follow him. And luckily, he's made a way for us through Jesus. There's a story told in table gathering a few weeks ago that I want to share to end the day. Somebody went outside. Worship team, you can come on up. Somebody went outside, and it was dark, of course, it was night. And they looked up in the sky, and it's not that they were having a crisis of faith or anything. They just looked up in the sky, and they said, God, if you're real, show me a shooting star. And immediately the thought came into their head, just look around. We don't need a shooting star to know God's real. I can walk outside and say that God's real. I don't have to walk outside to say God's real. We're going to talk next week about the complexity of the human body. I can look at you and say God's real. In fact, Scripture says that we are made in the image of God. So we look something like God. There's attributes of God within us. There's attributes of God in creation. And so we know God is real. Simply by looking outside. Simply by being alive today. And so my challenge for you this week is this. Spend some time in nature. There's a great trail right up the road here. You go up to 13, take a right. The trail's on the left. They now have a sign up. It'll take you back down there towards, I'm trying to think what the creek's name is. It'll take you back down there towards a couple creeks. It's a beautiful area. And I'm hoping you'll walk there before I do so that you get all the spider webs and I don't. But when you walk it, I've seen deer there multiple times. Squirrels, they can be a nuisance. But they're pretty amazing creatures to be able to run up a tree. Deer, I know some of you love killing them. And they taste good, right, Felicia? But deer are pretty amazing in themselves. Even seeing a little grub on the ground when you're walking, it's pretty amazing in itself. I've seen turtles up there. I've seen all types of things. Spend time in God's creation and admire our Creator. Admire His creativity. Admire His wisdom. When you go home, if you have pets, look at your pets and admire just how amazing they are. If you're out walking, we were here at the church the other day and there was a ton of birds back there. Admire the birds. Admire His creation. And Paul said, to work in your soul. That's what we're going to do today as we end. I'm going to give you an opportunity to think about all that he's created, specifically the animals. The greatness of his power, the wisdom, the creativity, it all points to the existence of God. And if God exists, we've got to give him glory. let's stand to your feet. We're getting ready to sing a mashup of two songs. We did this, I think, maybe the first week of this series, but it went over really well, and I think you'll enjoy it today. I want you to worship Him. I want you to give Him the glory that He deserves. Let's pray.